Hello, and welcome to Locked On Vikings. I am your host, I am your pal, I am the kid you copied off in math class. My name is Luke Braun, and unfortunately, for the last time of the 2018 NFL season, we got a game to recap. So let's dive into it. Vikings fell at home in a crucial win and in Week 17 game to the rival Chicago Bears. Final score was 24-10. There is a lot of soul-searching that we all have to do at the end of this season, and I think it's important when you have a game like this that ends the season, right, or a playoff loss or anything like that, you have to look at that game as one game, and that's what we're going to do today. We're gonna look at this game and why things in this game happened, and then later we're going to postmortem on the whole season. I think it's really hard when, you know, I'm recording this in the hours immediately following the game. It's really hard to separate those things out, right? Like, if you look at the way Kirk Cousins played, he's not so good in the first half, better in the second half. We'll get into more detail on that later. But the point is, the way that he played in this game, in this Sunday afternoon loss, does not reflect the way he played in the other 15 games. And we can acknowledge and say, hey, the other 15 games mattered. And you know, the fact that the offense couldn't get going against New England or Seattle is important and should be looked into as a reason that the Vikings did not make the playoffs. We can also, like, acknowledge that that's important and then say, okay, let's focus on how Kirk Cousins did this time. If we say, hey, Kirk Cousins was all right in this game, that doesn't mean Kirk Cousins was all right in the whole season. We should make that declaration separately if we're going to make it. So I think the headline coming out of this one, and it's the one that, you know, Vikings fans have been clamoring about pretty much the whole season, is pressure, right? The pass blocking really fell back down to earth after a pretty good streak that they were on, that if you listen to the Vikings-Bears preview from Thursday the 27th, that you would know that I was pretty gung-ho on the way that the line was playing going into this one, and then they just fell apart. I think I saw Arif Hassan tweet, I think it was 52%, pressure, and anything above 40 is really bad. 52 is completely unworkable. So from that angle, Kirk Cousins has to be given a little bit of slack for, you know, the offense not really being able to move. But there were a whole bunch of other problems that occurred on plays that had nothing to do with pressure, or on plays where pressure wasn't a part of things at all. You know, again, problems come in multitudes, and when you have a team with as much talent and as stacked of a roster as the Vikings do, and they're only a half a game above 500, you can't look at one sole problem and expect that to fix things. There was a lot going on, most of it on the offensive side of the ball, but I think it bears mentioning as the first problem we really dive into, that the offensive line and the pass blocking was really unacceptably bad. I will come back at this with some more concrete numbers, but just from what I watched, Riley Reiff was just terrible. He really fell apart in this game in the biggest hour of need. And I think that it's not infeasible to say that this was the last game Riley Reiff plays for the Vikings. I'm not sure of the details of his contract situation, and we have the whole offseason to really go into depth about that. But if this is, you know, the last note, if you're evaluating whether or not you want to keep Riley Reiff as the franchise left tackle like you tried to sign him as in the 2017 offseason, this is not the note that Riley Reiff wanted to go out on. This was a really, really bad game for him. And a lot of the worst moments that happened to the Vikings, if they happened because of pressure, it always seemed like that pressure came from the left tackle. Now, I haven't talked a lot on this show about the differences in importance between the different offensive line positions, but suffice it to say that left tackle is the most important position on the offensive line, except maybe center, depending on how much you value having a guy call the right, having the guy who calls the protections, you know, be the best, you know, be the most important guy. It's an interesting debate to have, maybe one we can talk about later. But left tackle is very, very important, right? He usually goes up against the premier edge rusher. He's protecting the blind side of the quarterback. And I think if ever there were going to be a position where you need to upgrade, I think it's naive to think it's anything but left tackle. I know that the guards are the smaller names, right? And Mike Remmers had plenty of problems himself. He got beat up. He had a holding penalty. And I think his contract means he might get replaced as well. But at the left tackle position is where you need to have the most solid performances. And you need to anchor there before you start to build out the rest of your offensive line. It does not matter if you have a good right guard, if you don't have a good left tackle. And if you do have a good left tackle and you don't have a good right guard, it's a much more workable situation. The next overall thing that I noticed, and then we'll kind of go into a little bit more of the like in-depth stuff about this game, is that I think pre-snap, it really didn't seem like Kirk Cousins had a lot going on. It's hard to know, obviously, what the communication is and what means something and what doesn't, but it seemed very often like there were unfavorable or favorable alignments, and Kirk Cousins wasn't adjusting the play to take advantage of that or adjust for whatever he needed to adjust to. That may not be Kirk Cousins' fault. Again, we don't really know where the chain of command ends on that, right? He might not have been allowed to. He might have been told, hey, don't change things pre-snap. It confused people too much or something like that, right? We talked a lot about miscommunications. That's one way to combat that problem is to, you know, cut down on the pre-snap changes because that's, you know, fewer opportunities for people to do the wrong thing. But the downside of that, there was a play, if you go to my Twitter feed, at LukeBrunNFL, you can follow the show at Locked On Vikings. I don't think I said that. But if you go to my Twitter feed, you'll find a play early in the game, I think it was on the second drive, where Khalil Mack was lined up man-to-man on a stack of Diggs and Thielen. It was Khalil Mack and a cornerback stacked up against Diggs and Thielen. So you had a pretty good chance to get Diggs or Thielen in coverage against an outside linebacker edge rusher, and it was a run play. You got to be able to see that pre-snap and have some kind of check, some kind of, hey, you know, I'm going to yell kill, kill, or I'm going to yell, like, Oompa Loompa, Oompa Loompa, or whatever it is, and that means that, hey, I see your mismatch, let's do a hot route for it. Either Kirk Cousins isn't seeing that, or Kirk Cousins isn't allowed to do anything about it. I don't really care which one it is, but it's something that you really, really should adjust for. So with that, we are going to go take a quick ad break, and when we come back, we'll talk a little more about Cousins, we'll talk a little bit more about the team as a whole, and we will revisit some of your bold predictions. So I will see you in a little bit. And we are back. So let's talk about our $84 million man, Kirk Cousins. He was really frustrating to watch in the first half of this game. And it wasn't the problems that you would typically, you know, use to criticize quarterbacks. A lot of times you'll criticize quarterbacks, you know, they'll miss open throws or they won't be seeing the field or it'll be like reading things. Kirk Cousins seemed to just have a mentality for this game that was broken. For one, and I think down the stretch, this happened to him a lot, and it's understandable considering he was under a top 10 amount of pressure for most of the year, but he was a little bit too concerned with getting the ball out of his hand quickly instead of letting plays develop. There was a 3rd and 16, and I know it sounds, you know, really bad to like criticize a 3rd and 16 because expecting those to be converted is pretty unwise, but this is something that I broke down on Twitter. He checked down to Kyle Rudolph, who obviously didn't get the first down yardage, but he was under no pressure. He could have sat in the pocket and waited for that play to develop. He could have manipulated and maneuvered the pocket. There's a lot of, I mean, there's 20, 25 quarterbacks in the league that can sit there and maneuver that pocket. He had a pretty good one that can use that to buy a little bit more time, and he could have tried to take a downfield shot, see who could have gotten single coverage. And the play design on that play was a little bit flawed as well. Both Kyle Rudolph and Latavius Murray were pressure outlets, and you only had 3 downfield routes being run on a 3rd and 16 play where you can pretty much expect Chicago to rush 3 and drop 8 deep. So having 3 people going deep versus 8 is not a situation where you're going to win. So giving him the benefit of the doubt as he was set up to pretty much fail on that play call, I'm still... I would like to see different traits emerge, right? I would like to see him move around in the pocket a little bit more, and I would like to see him utilize his players or know how to utilize his players, right? We all know that Kyle Rudolph, after the catch, is not the best. He's not very quick. He doesn't accelerate very well, and he doesn't break tackles. I mean, he can drop his shoulder and fall forward for 2 just fine, but he doesn't break tackles like somebody like Dalvin Cook or Latavius Murray, who was the other pressure outlet on that play. So I would have rather seen him, you know, manipulate the pocket and throw downfield. In lieu of that, I would have rather seen him throw to Latavius Murray versus Kyle Rudolph. But more than anything, I would have rather seen a play with more options downfield so that Kirk Cousins could read it. But I think that play was a good example of, A, evaluate traits, not results, right? That even if he does it, if Kirk Cousins does everything perfect and right, you're probably not converting that one anyways. So it's not like I'm saying, oh, you know, a good quarterback converts that 3rd and 16. Well, of course not. That would be insane. But I think you can look at that play and see traits that you wish weren't there. But as you go on to the second half, and as the game kind of progressed, and this was really a pattern we saw all year, Kirk Cousins started to feel a little bit more comfortable improvising. And I think if you're a coach looking forward to 2019, a quarterback's coach, maybe Stefanski or whoever ends up taking over a quarterback's coach, or Mike Zimmer himself, I think you want to look at the second half of this game and build on it. Because what Kirk Cousins did, even though the numbers weren't particularly gaudy in the play, you know, they still didn't move the ball downfield. They only got one touchdown drive. The rest of it was a whole bunch of four and outs and, or a whole bunch of failed fourth down conversions. But I think what Kirk Cousins displayed in the second half of this game is something that if you can get him to do that, to loosen up and play with that kind of, almost a desperation, I guess, is the word that I would use for it. He was rolling out of the pocket. He was in so many situations where he knew, hey, if I don't convert this, the season ends. And there were a lot of fourth downs, and there were a lot of, you know, if I don't get a successful play out of this, the season ends. And he was rolling out of the pocket. He was bailing. He was scrambling. He was doing things to extend plays rather than just crumpling and taking a sack or throwing it away. Sometimes it would lead to throwaways, but the process that got us there, remember, we're process over results here on Locked On Vikings. The process that got to that throwaway is very encouraging. And I've always kind of said that throwaways were very good plays. I said it a lot when we were all arguing about Teddy Bridgewater, right? That he threw the ball away a ton, and oftentimes it was the correct call, considering that either nobody was down open downfield or the pressure had ruined the play or whatever. Kirk Cousins, I think, had a lot of like those same good throwaways in the second half of this game. And I think looking at those traits and building on them is a way to make him a more viable quarterback in 2019. Somebody that, you know, if you take the quarterback that Kirk Cousins is when everything is going perfectly, and this has always been the thing, right? He's good when things are going well. And when things start to break down, he starts to break down with them. And if you can make it so that broken plays are converted even a little bit, even just so they have a chance to be converted, I think this offense can grow a lot. So I think the second half version of Kirk Cousins, in my opinion, is one of the better iterations of Kirk Cousins we've seen. And I think you just need to convince him to play with that same, you know, this play needs to go or it's over desperation that encourages him to roll out and run around and extend plays and try to improvise. And I think I'm working with the wide receivers too, right? I'm working with Diggs and Thielen and Rudolph, and I'm getting them to improvise with Kirk Cousins. I think an offseason of continuity will do very well for him, and hopefully there won't be too much turnover where they have to, you know, learn a whole new gambit over training camp. I hope they're not starting from square one in training camp, because I think a little bit better chemistry and a little better communication will make this offense sing. I mean, no matter who's calling the plays, really. Last point on Kirk Cousins before we move on. We saw the same communication errors rear their ugly head again. There was a 2nd and 10 after a pretty good throwaway, like what I just talked about, one of those good throwaways. It was 2nd and 10. Kirk Cousins heaves the ball downfield for Aldrick Robinson, is nowhere near him. And, you know, Aldrick Robinson joined the team midseason, so him, you know, having miscommunications is a little understandable, but that was like 3 months ago. Like, at a certain point, you have to expect the players that you add to, like, contribute and be viable. But you just couldn't trust him all season to be able to make those plays. Now, he did a lot of dynamic things. He scored a lot of touchdowns, but he's kind of a bigger symptom of, or a symptom of a greater problem, because this happened with Rudolph and Diggs and Thielen and Treadwell. Everybody had this problem all season where people would run the wrong routes or people wouldn't be on the same page. Now we saw, you know, Thielen and Cousins fighting on the sideline. That doesn't bother me so much. I think that the idea that, you know, professional football players have to be like all buttoned up at all times is kind of ridiculous. Like, come on, who hasn't gotten mad? But, you know, you see these guys are just not on the same page, and they never were all season. And so I think it's kind of fitting that that the season ended in part because, you know, the quarterback and the guys he's throwing to are not on the same page down to the bitter end. And if you want to fix the offense for 2019, I think you have to start there. I don't think it's something that you can fix by, like, stripping out a bunch of players and inserting new ones. I think you have to start by saying, all right, we got to cut out all of these miscommunications. I think a lot of games this year would have gone differently if we could cut out the miscommunications in those games that are just throwing away downs. And we'll get more into Kirk Cousins on the whole later, but that's going to wrap up at least my review of him for this game. So we're going to go to another quick break, and when we come back, we'll talk about bold predictions, and we'll just kind of wrap things up for the last game recap of the year and talk a little bit about what we're going to do in the offseason. So I'll see you guys in a second. And we are back. So before we go into the bold predictions, I do need to talk about probably the other headline of this game, which is the only thing on defense that I think bears mentioning, because the defense did have a reasonable game. They let Mitch Trubisky run away a couple times, but that seemed a little bit less like a scheme thing and a little bit more like an execution thing, which I don't know. I think it's less bothersome because you could, there was a play where I believe Anthony Barr actually was a spy and Trubisky just got away from him. That's fair. Trubisky is an incredible athlete and that kind of thing is just going to happen. At least you had the right play dialed in. And there were a couple times where Everson Griffin lost contain because he's a little too aggressive, and that's always been who he is. I think that is a little bit more excusable, just because it's you scouted him and then you just didn't execute. That happens. That's football. Mitch Trubisky is amazing and he runs away from everybody. But I think on third down, the defense really regressed, and that's super surprising, right? Because the Vikings have had a historic third down defense for 2 years now. In 2017, they set records. In 2018, they actually kept that pace. So having them, stop on first and second down, there was that one drive, that 9-minute drive with a million third down conversions. That was really surprising and really disappointing to see. I think with all past evidence, we can probably reasonably chalk it up as a fluke, but it does bear mentioning. And I think the biggest reason that it happened, A, there were a few penalties. Some were, I don't know, better calls than others, but there were penalties that allowed the Bears to continue their drive even after you got a stop. So you did execute well and you got the stop, but then there was a holding or something. And also, the other things that happened were basically losing at the catch point every single time. That is where Xavier Rhodes shines, and not having him active in this game really, really hurt on those third downs. As well as Trey Waynes and Holton Hill have played this season, and I think they both played well enough to be, to give the Vikings the option to consider them as long-term options, they are not as good at the catch point. I mean, Trey Waynes at the catch point, that's always been his worst thing, right? He's really good at getting into position and he's fast enough to keep up with the big guys. But when the ball actually gets there, he loses at the catch point very often. And Holton Hill, a rookie, had the same problem in this game. Xavier Rhodes is amazing at getting in there and swatting the ball away or blanketing the guy so much that you just can't throw that ball. And even though he had a down year this year and he was hurt all year, that's probably why he had a down year, right? He was playing through hamstrings and groins and all kinds of problems. The Vikings really missed him on that drive. And that drive was really the dagger. You kind of felt after that touchdown happened that there was just, that was your chance, right? You had six third downs and you can't capitalize on one of them. You're not winning this game. So with that, let's get into some bold predictions. So before the game, from the @LockedOnVikings Twitter account. Unfortunately, this is the last time we're going to do this season, but I asked for some bold predictions. Actually, it might not be. Maybe we'll do it for the playoffs. I'm not sure yet, but I asked for some of your bold predictions, and I read a few of them out on the show, so let's revisit some of that. We had one from EddieD71 that said, Rudolph has a huge game, Cook has more receiving yards than running yards, and we get by on a made 51-yard field goal. So we didn't really get there in any of these counts, right? So we didn't get by on a made 51-yard field goal. Dan Bailey made all his kicks. There's that. Rudolph didn't have very much of a game, and Cook had 39 rushing yards to, 21 receiving yards. That was the closest we got, on any of these, but we didn't quite get there. I actually liked that last prediction a lot. I thought there was really a chance for that. Dalvin Cook passes have been one of the best and most consistent things in the Vikings offense, and I hope that they go into 2019 with a focus on those swing passes and screens, angle routes, wheel routes. Use Dalvin Cook in the passing game. He's an unbelievable weapon. We had a more negative one. We got a little bit closer here that said the Vikings will barely lose on a missed field goal and Adrian Peterson will fumble a go-ahead scoop and score versus Philadelphia. Things weren't exactly that close, but the Vikings did lose and Philadelphia did kick the crap out of Washington in Washington. So at least we got there by letter, but not by spirit. And this is probably the boldest one that said the Vikings will give up no sacks and rush for 175+. Not quite. The offensive line completely cratered when it mattered most, and there's probably going to be a lot of overhaul there, both in personnel and in staff. There was a bold prediction that said Danielle Hunter would get 4 sacks, and I did want to touch on that because Danielle Hunter had a $500,000 incentive on his contract if he could get half a sack tonight, and he did not. That is pretty sad. I think you always have to root for players to get their due on their incentives. You know, it strains the cap a little more, but it's always it always helps because it's like because they were playing well. But that that incentive was not hit on the cap, which really stinks. You know, you really hoped that Danielle Hunter could get home once. So before we wrap up the final rapid reaction kind of game recap of the season, and tomorrow in tomorrow's show we'll go into some of the more detailed stuff. We'll go over the pressure numbers and the exact things we can get from Pro Football Focus, and we can also get into the coaches' film a little bit so we can get a better idea of what happened on some of the more confusing plays. But before we do that, I just want to do a little bit of housekeeping. The Vikings are not going to play another football game until next September. But this show is not going to skip a beat. We are going to continue doing things in the off season. We are going to go daily. The intention is to continue to be daily all the way through free agency and through the draft. We'll have a lot to talk about. We'll talk about draft prospects and free agents. Even in the lull of like between the draft and like OTAs and then that like big super empty month between then and training camp, we will have a lot of players to talk about, a lot of new faces, a lot of undrafted free agents, and they all have interesting stories. If you're unfamiliar with my work for purpleptsd.com, I would do an annual series there where I would talk about every player on the 90-man roster, all the way down to the guys who will never make the team, talk about their stories and their, you know, what makes them interesting, why they ended up in the end getting a shot at the NFL in the first place, and you know, why they're a lower name. I still intend to do all that, and I will probably try to find a way to port it into this medium. So we'll talk a lot about like the lower players, you know, the guys you're watching in the fourth quarter of a preseason game, which is the next time you're going to watch Vikings football, unfortunately, and hopefully can give you a better idea of like who these guys are that you're looking at. But before that, you know, we're going to be able to talk about draft prospects and free agency prospects. And in the more immediate future, we'll be able to do a lot of postmortems. You know, we'll be able to do a whole episode just diving into the offensive line and who is good and who is bad, who we should keep, who we shouldn't, where the free agents are, all those kind of planning elements. We'll have a lot to talk about. And there's always a lot of Vikings to talk about. So I will continue to bring you Locked On Vikings content so you can get your fix even when the team isn't playing. So with that, we are going to wrap up for the day. I will see you tomorrow with a little bit more in-depth Vikings Bears stuff, and then we will talk more about the offseason moving forward and the team's season as a whole. So thank you guys so much for listening. My name is Luke Braun. You can follow me on Twitter at LukeBraunNFL. You can follow the show at Locked On Vikings. And for the last game of the Vikings 2018 season, I bid you skull.